mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. As we look back at 2013, we were struck by the number of mishaps made by politicians, celebrities, athletes, and companies, followed, of course, by the oh-so-heartfelt public apology.
I've made plenty of mistakes along the way, but I beg you, my children, my team, my fans, my partners, beg for your forgiveness. Please forgive me.
Celebrity chef Paula Deen there in the second of two videos in which she apologized for using the N-word in the past, along with other behavior more suited to the antebellum era. The video was released after several sponsors abandoned Deen, and she was sacked by the Food Network just a few hours after its release. Since we, the American public, are the subjects of those kind of apologetic videos, I'm here with my word-of-mouth colleagues Maureen McMurray and producer Taylor Quimby to talk about how the year of saying sorry, or in some cases, the year of the non-apology, sat with us. Taylor, we're going to start with you, since you ranked Paula Deen's among the worst, or maybe lamest, of the apologies. What made it so memorable and uncomfortable to listen to?
Well, what we just listened to was not the first apology. The first apology was issued by Paula Deen Enterprises. And although it did have an apology in there, sort of, it said, you know, Mrs. Deen does not find acceptable the use of this term under any circumstance by anyone, nor condone any form of racism or discrimination. It also had basically a justification for her use of that language. The statement said, Paula was born 60 years ago when America's South had schools that were segregated, different bathrooms, different restaurants. And it sort of went on to more or less make an excuse for why she might say something like what she said. That didn't sit well with anybody, so she then came out with these two videos. And I think the very fact that you would have to hear multiple apologies is a sign that the first was A, not authentic, and B, didn't cut it. So every subsequent apology really sounds like a desperate attempt to save yourself from the public backlash that clearly bit her in the butt.
It violates the Ben Franklin rule or maxim that says never ruin an apology with an excuse. You actually spoke to someone who talked about what makes a real, genuine apology.
I did. Actually, I think you're right, because I think we're used to seeing more bad apologies than we're used to hearing good ones. So I got in touch with a man named Guy Winch. He's a psychologist and author of a number of books. And he wrote for Psychology Today a short article that was sort of on the science of sorry, where he basically said what every apology should have is these five parts.
A good apology should have five parts. It should have a clear I'm sorry statement. It should have an expression of regret for what happened or what the person did. It really should have an acknowledgement that some kind of social norm or some kind of expectation was violated in that case. It should obviously have a request for forgiveness, because that's the goal of the apology. And most importantly, and this is the factor that we tend to omit most often, it really should have an empathy statement that acknowledges the full impact of our actions or our omissions on the other person.
So that was Guy Winch, a psychologist and author of several books, including Emotional First Aid. He was speaking to Taylor Quimby, who's here with me, along with Maureen McMurray. Maureen, I'm guessing that some of the apologies we heard this year fall a little short of that list of five.
Certainly they do. And one comes to mind for me because I recently moved to New Hampshire from New York, where I had been living for the past 11 years. And Anthony Weiner comes to mind. I was there during his first offense. I was there when he resigned from his position. I was also there when he was running for mayor. And I would certainly say that his many attempts at apologies, while they did have the first part of it, a clear I'm sorry, I think what was missing was, did he mean that? Was he authentic when he was saying that? Or was he just put out by the fact that people discovered these photos and it was ruining his political career? And I would say what is really interesting about Anthony Weiner in New York in terms of the response of his constituents before he resigned from Congress, the majority of his constituents did not want him to leave. They felt that he was doing a wonderful job. A majority of them also wanted him to run again and were willing to vote for him. So after he resigned, he was a viable candidate for mayor. Unfortunately, he had to apologize a second time, and that apology, I think, missed all of those elements. There was no clear I'm sorry, no expression of real regret. And he really didn't have an acknowledgement that the expectation as a mayoral candidate was violated.
Mm. Well, let's hear just a little bit from Anthony Weiner. He, like you, is referring to his previous apology when he stepped down as a congressman from New York. In this clip, he is a mayoral candidate and more. A sexting has been discovered, so he's apologizing again.
While some of the things that have been posted today are true and some are not, there is no question that what I did was wrong. This behavior is behind me. I've apologized to my wife, Huma, and I'm grateful that she has worked through these issues with me and that I've had her forgiveness. I want to again say how very sorry I am to anyone who has received the receiving end of these messages and the disruption that this has caused. And my wife, as I have said, my wife and I, as I've said, are moving forward together.
So Anthony Weiner again caught sexting or sending inappropriate texts to women with a sort of false, under a false name. Now, this was a year of a couple of different political apologies. President Obama had to apologize for saying that under Obamacare, people who liked their insurance could keep it. Turned out not to be true.
I think the president's apologized almost every time he's made public comments.
he keeps getting caught up, but he not quite as defensively as Rob Ford, perhaps the nadir of political apologies. Well, let's say several apologies. Mm. Many of them, as events were revealed, came from Toronto Mayor Rob Ford. Here he is at one of his early denials of charges that he had used and had been filmed smoking crack cocaine.
The revelations yesterday of cocaine, escorts, prostitution has pushed me over the line. And I used unforgivable language. And again, I apologize. These allegations are 100% lies. When you attack my integrity as a father and as a husband, I see red.
First of all, I think that there have been so many public apologies in this past year because people are getting caught by electronic trails like Anthony Weiner or YouTube videos or just home videos taken like Rob Ford. So I guess leading to the question, what good is an apology if it's just mandatory?
I mean, I think in his case, the apology could never really cut it. He might be saying sorry to the people of Toronto or to the world at large, but I think the issue with Rob Ford is that the offenses that he committed and that he was accused of were so egregious that really it's not so much an apology, but there needs to be consequences. I mean, you can't be the mayor of a large city and be on crack.
What if something really bad happened in the middle of the night while you were out smoking crack?
Right. And I sort of think, you know, the concept of an apology is to ask for forgiveness. And in the case of a public figure, asking for forgiveness is in some ways asking for allowance to stay on the job.
What do you hear, Maria?
Well, what I think is interesting with Rob Ford's apology in contrast to Anthony Weiner, clearly when he was reading his apology, he was reading. He sounded tired, very put out, whereas I didn't hear an apology from Rob Ford. It seemed like he was, you know, kind of making excuses. But also there was an air of authenticity. He seemed angry. It didn't sound like that had been written by some staffer. I don't know if that's what the future of the public apology will be, if that's the threshold that hearing something authentic can stand in for a sorry that you don't really mean.
Well, right. It doesn't sound like it was planned, manicured, or written by somebody in the PR department. But there are a couple of different examples this year of what I'd call the non-apology. Mm. Some version of, you know, I'm sorry you were offended by my actions. Here's Chip Wilson. He's head of Lululemon. These are the makers of the see-through yoga pants, which he then blamed on women wearing them because they were too large for them or because their thighs were too fat and they rub together. Then he had to apologize for that. Here he is.
I'm sad. I'm really sad. I'm sad for the repercussions of my actions. I'm sad for the people of Lululemon who I care so much about that have really had to face the brunt of my actions. I take responsibility for all that has occurred and the impact it has had on you. I'm sorry to have put you all through this.
Chip Wilson, their head of Lululemon, apologizing apparently to the people who work for him rather than the people he offended by saying they were too fat to wear his pants. And I guess I'm hearing something else here. I'm sad. poor Chip Wilson. Similarly with Rob Ford when he later said, you have no idea what I have to put up with.
You don't know what it's like.
So he's the victim.
Yeah, if you go back to the Guy Winch's sort of five pieces of a good apology, it sounds like the only thing he was really saying there was an expression of regret. I mean, he never even said a clear I'm sorry statement. And that expression of regret seemed mostly that he got caught. It sounds like he regrets getting busted.
I'm sorry, so sorry.
Word of Mouth senior producer Maureen McMurray and associate producer Taylor Quimby are with me. We're welcoming the clean slate of 2014 after what turned out to be a banner year for apologies. And wait, there is more, lots more to cover. But we have to take a short break first. And we are truly, truly sorry for that. Please stay with us for more Word of Mouth on NHPR.
I'm sorry. So sorry. Please accept my apology, but love is blind, and I was too blind to see. Oh, 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 oh yes, you tell me.
Word of mouth!
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. It's become a public relations axiom in the media age. When you are wrong, promptly admit it. Well, scratch that. When you get caught, apologize. Your publicist would advise you to do some damage control publicly in front of the most sympathetic audience with the right measure of regret, maybe a little shame, and a vow never to commit the offending act again. It's a topic that my colleagues Maureen McMurray and Taylor Quimby and I have been thinking about a lot. We've already heard some of the elements that make up a genuine apology and found Paula Deen, Rob Ford, and Anthony Weiner lacking. But perhaps the most offensive apology of 2013 came right at the beginning of the year. Here's a clip from Lance Armstrong's interview with Oprah.
We talked about apologies, and I told you that I owe a lot of people apologies, and the obvious ones, the ones that we know by name. The Frankies, the Betsys, the Greg LeMonds, the Tyler Hamiltons, the Floyd Landises, the M. O'Reillys. I owe them apologies. And whenever they're ready, I will give them.
I owe them apologies. Well, how big of you to
whenever
acknowledge
you're ready
that.
To hear my sorry, I will say it.
Well, what made that? I mean, for me, it's so offensive and arrogant for the vehement way in which he took people down who accused him. Your thoughts?
I mean, he didn't apologize. He basically said that he would. So there's not an apology there. And if you listen to that whole interview, there's a lot of places where it seems like he's not willing to back down. You know, so it really was all about him. It was focused entirely on sort of what he's gone through and whether or not he's ready to acknowledge that he was wrong.
And I also feel like his apology is missing that fifth element of a good apology, which is an empathy statement that acknowledges mistakes' impact on others. I think Taylor hit it right on the head. And what's interesting, there is a second part to that apology that I would love for you to hear, Virginia, that might even be more offensive and telling of Lance Armstrong.
Do you owe David Walsh an apology?
That's a good question.
Do you owe David Walsh an apology, who for 13 years has pursued this story, right, who wrote for The Times, who's now written books right about you and this entire process?
I'd apologize to David.
Yeah, you know.
He's the journalist whose reputation was slandered by Lance Armstrong because he accused him of doping.
Yes, and also that the way that Lance Armstrong approaches it, you know, that he would be doing him a favor.
Now, we've heard the Ben Franklin approach. How about the John Wayne approach, which is never apologize? It's a sign of weakness. What about the no apologies? Now, some have called out Ted Cruz, who advocated for the government to be shut down as a bargaining chip for repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Even a member of his own party, New Hampshire's own Senator Kelly Ayotte, chastised him for not having an endgame there. He never apologized. Other notable lacks of apology this year.
Well, Poynter has a really interesting list they have on the web, and it's sort of it's a compilation of typos and bad headlines and, you know, a number of funny errors from the media over the course of 2013. Their sort of big one is Error of the Year, and that actually went to 60 Minutes for their mistaken Benghazi report where they relied on false testimony from a witness. Their runner-up went to the New York Post for their cover. You might remember this. It was during the Marathon bombing investigation.
Mm-hmm. The bagmen.
Yes, the bagmen. Mm-hmm. And it said, feds seek these two pictured at Boston Marathon next to a picture of a couple guys. One of them's wearing a backpack. And, you know, there was
not guilty. They were not the Tsarnaev brothers,
right,
by the
way. But putting them on the front of the paper turned the manhunt's attention towards a couple of innocent guys. And it was, you know, a lot of people said it was very irresponsible. The New York Post basically stuck by their story. They said, we were just releasing a photo that was released by the FBI. We took it down as soon as they moved on from that tack of the investigation. But those two men have sued the paper for defamation. I think probably there's a lot of people who have mixed feelings about this, but it was a clear no apology strategy.
And, you know, what's interesting about this kind of John Wayne non-apology approach that may have worked in the case with something like Duck Dynasty, because there really isn't a lot at stake there. I mean, he did say horribly offensive things, but it is
very consistent with his character.
Exactly.
Right?
It's a TV show. However, with, you know, when you're talking about Ted Cruz and the government shutdown, when you're talking about the New York Post putting these people on the front page as suspects, completely unfounded, or even something with Lara Logan, who did apologize, but I think a lot of people felt came up short with that apology. These are major, major things at stake here. This is the way the government is run. These are people's lives. So I think people's threshold may have lowered in that case for what they're willing to accept as an apology.
Well, what I've been thinking about a lot is, as we've been reviewing this, is the nature of forgiveness. This is something that came up a lot after Nelson Mandela died, and there was all this talk about how he forgave his oppressors, and the whole country went through this process of forgiveness with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It also came up for me having seen this movie Philomena recently, based on a real person. She had a baby out of wedlock in Ireland and was, you know, basically put into the Magdalene laundry system, made to work, you know, hours and hours a day, had the baby, and the baby was sold to a wealthy American couple, and she spent many, many years looking for him, and she forgives the Catholic Church. Now, these are institutions, the apartheid system, the Catholic Church, they never asked for forgiveness. But what she realizes is that the weight of harboring hatred is on her. And I've heard this expression before, you know, like harboring a resentment is like taking poison and waiting for another person to die. You know, that the pain is on us. But does it really matter to us to forgive a Rob Ford? Does it really matter to us to forgive Paula Deen? Or are we just put in this position falsely? Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think there's two parts to this. And one is, you know, if you're in the public eye, in order to keep your job, if you make a mistake, often you have to make an apology. And so there's a question from us, the public: are you authentically sorry, or are you just doing this because you have to? Mm-hmm. I also think that apologies are innately personal things. You know, when somebody close to me can admit that they hurt my feelings and sort of go through those five steps, I can handle that apology and I can forgive that person. But a public figure, you don't actually know them personally anyway. So their apology is in some ways as hollow as your relationship with that figure. When Alec Baldwin apologized via an MSNBC website statement, it was very well written in respect to the 5 points laid out by Guy Winch. But I don't feel necessarily as though Alec Baldwin is apologizing to me for his use of homophobic mm-hmm. language. So I guess that goes both ways, which is to say they're going to be forced to apologize, and I'm going to be suspicious of that apology pretty much no matter what.
Well, I think as we go forward, I think we may have reached our saturation point for sorry. Mm. A lot of the apologies that were even getting this national attention should not be getting national attention. Anthony Weiner, yes, he was running for mayor of New York City. Why is that? Why does he have a national platform for that? Does someone in New Hampshire have to forgive Anthony Weiner? Rob Ford, that's Toronto. It's just now this fodder that we want to be part of this drama that really shouldn't matter to us in a political sense. So I do think that we may reach our saturation point where, you know, our ability to forgive will just be diluted.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, maybe the reason that some people in New Hampshire or in California are watching Anthony Weiner get sort of vilified by the press in New York is because they want to watch him squirm. And that's probably why the worst apologies seem to be the ones that get the most press. Mm-hmm. You know, a good apology, it's a flash in the pan. If it happens quickly, if it's a good response, if it's heartfelt, you forget about it. You know, the reason we're not saying the best apologies is because I can't even remember them.
Well, Taylor Quimby, I sincerely apologize for any way that I offend you in the coming year.
Yeah, I think sort of pre-apologizing might actually be the way
of the future. The prophylactic apology.
Yeah. Listen, I'm sorry for my life in general. I'm going to say some bad things, and I'm going to hurt some people, and I'm sorry.
Taylor, thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And Maureen, thank you, and so sorry.
I forgive you, Virginia.
Taylor Quimby, Maureen McMurray, and backstage today, Zach Nugent, the Word of Mouth crew. Terribly, terribly sorry.
I'm very sorry.
Even lovers need a holiday.
For more tips on a genuine apology, you can listen to Taylor's interview with Guy Winch. Go to wordofmouthradio.org.
Hold me down. It's hard for me to say I'm sorry. I just want you to